Welcome to the Passage to Profit Show, the Road to Entrepreneurship podcast. Now it's time for our featured guest, Matt Ross, who is the founder of the One River School, and he's also the former CEO of the School of Rock. He's also an author and a commentator as well. So welcome to the show, Matt.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you here. You were the CEO of School of Rock, mm-hmm. So the most important question we all want to know is, did you ever meet Jack Black?
No. But I met his alter ego, a guy named Paul Green, and actually Paul Green was the human that character was based on, and he was the founder of School of Rock.
No kidding. Mm-hmm. So how did you get involved with School of Rock?
Great question. So I was in radio at the time, trying to figure an exit plan out of radio. Why? Not because I hate radio, because I did it 20 years and I sort of needed to try something different. I was managing musicians, and an artist that I was managing texted me one day and said, how'd you like to be the CEO of School of Rock? And I thought my career was over because I'm getting job leads from my struggling musician who I thought was teaching in someone's living room. As it turned out, they had 5 schools. They were out of money and they needed a leader to help stabilize the business and scale it. And it was right for me.
How many schools do they have now?
400.
Oh, I guess you were the right guy for the job.
There's a lot of rocking going on out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, and you know, like most companies, growth occurs in phases. Mm-hmm. My phase was the stabilize, raise capital, build credibility, and really begin to scale to prove concept. Mm-hmm. So we got it from 5 to 55 in 3 years. We had another 50 under contract, and then the recession hit in 2009. You pause, you push pause, stabilize again, raise new capital, and I left in 2010.
Wow.
So I did what I was supposed to do with that brand.
I mean, it's a great business model. First of all, you've got this killer movie leading the way, right? And then every kid wants to be a rock star, right? Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yep.
Ken Daschau from Q104.3, The Rock of New York. Ken, did you want to be a rock star?
You know, it's weird. I love musicians and I play, but as a little kid on the radio, hearing that happy voice play the Beatles for me, for whatever reason, I always thought, I would love to do that. I would love to be that person in your ear making your day better. It just made me happy listening to the radio, and that was the AM days. So I was the guy spinning all the plates like a plate act. I was writing plays. I was built a high school radio station. I was doing comedy. I was doing stand-up. I was writing plays. I was acting. I was doing everything and loved it all, but it's scrambling. And radio just seemed like the door opened wider there. 17 years at the station I grew up listening to, WNEW-FM. And when that collapsed, this other station that had been the classical station in New York, Q104.3, it was WQXR, classical, said maybe rock isn't finished. And they kind of cherry-picked their favorite DJs. And Matt Ross was the GM at the time, who said to programming, I want Kenny to do afternoons. I hear what it's supposed to sound like.
It's true.
You always have to have an angel. You have to have somebody who is your cheerleader, who takes that chance on you. And like anything, it's especially true in acting and in the arts, but I think in any business, when somebody gives you the opportunity, that's the luck.
Yeah.
But you have to have the skill set to deliver.
He paid me $10,000.
But that's in $10 installments over
the years. Well, when we were talking before the show, yeah. You said that you had to go approach the program director with this suggestion. And back in those days, program directors were king. They really didn't take suggestions from the GM, right?
If you're the GM of a baseball team, you're not sending messages to the manager on the field. They want to manage their players and put them in the positions that they see fit. And so the program department, they don't want the GM, who's typically the business guy or gal, telling them who to put on the air and when. But our guy, Bob Buckman, was new to us from Long Island. He was at BAB. He was trying to work with me to build the brand. He was really open and flexible and different. And he saw the same thing in Kenny.
So did you guys know each other before
Kenny and
this?
I?
Yeah.
No.
We met at work, you know, at work as my boss, and we've been lifelong friends because we kind of see life the same way, as a series of opportunities and doing your best. You know, why have I had this luck? April 1st, it'll be, 28 years on the air here at Q104.3, which in radio years is like 1,000. But I understand that my job is to be entertaining and be on the air, but the other part of my job is to help the salespeople sell what I do. And there are artists and there are DJs who I don't want to know anything about that. Don't talk to me. which I don't know. I don't think it works if you're living on an island. Do I go on sales calls? Do I make videos every single week? Because if they can't sell it, it doesn't matter what I do.
I mean, there's the art side and there's the business side, right? And the both have to be there for the art to be heard, right?
One of the things in School of Rock, and I don't know, I mean, they're teaching him how to play and it's wonderful, but it's called the music business. It's called show business. And as talented as you want to be, the other part of the word is very, very important.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so that's what you're doing now with One River School, right? It's a school for creative education, and it's one of the only private schools that does that,
yeah,
right?
So I left School of Rock. It was 2010, had a lot going on personally, and now I had this gap professionally. I wrote a book about this recently. It came out called Grow or Fold, and it was, for me, a pivot point to make a bet on myself. And the idea here was, how come there were no cool art schools in my neighborhood? I didn't know that I'd open a lot of them. But I just thought I would do one in Englewood, New Jersey, One River from New York, take some of that city culture and bring it to the burbs and see if I could translate what we did from School of Rock into art and design education. And it worked. We have 15 now, and we're going to scale it.
So what are the age of the people that are in your school, One River?
In terms of students?
Mm-hmm.
All ages. We started pre-K and we go to senior citizens.
So. Sign me up. I'm in the latter category.
And, what kind of projects do you do?
So we wrote our own curriculum. Mm-hmm. And so if you sign up, you don't take like that semester class in charcoal drawing. You jump in and you take a class called Art Shuffle, which means it's project-based, and every month, new project. We change the medium. We change the subject matter, the reference artist. So it doesn't get dull and stale and boring. Or you could take a focus class, focus on painting or drawing, and we could take you into one medium. We have digital art classes, animation, all sorts of things, pre-college programs, summer camps. So there really is a broad menu of class types that we've created with our own lesson plans that we wrote ourselves. So from an IP standpoint, we own all of this intellectual property. It's unique to us, and I'm proud of it.
It's very valuable.
One of the things I was going to say about Matt's book that I love about Grow or Fold, it's not just a rah-rah book. It's not, hey, you can do this. If you want to make a change midlife and get out of the corporate world and start your own business, you can do it. It's a workbook that goes through the steps of what you have to think about. Your personal, are you risk averse? How much risk are you willing to take? If you want to start a business and you're passionate, do you do your research? And the thing I love the most, Matt, about your book is that at the end it says, do this workbook. It's an actual workbook. Answer these questions. And in the end, you may find out this is absolutely not right for me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just telling you you can do it. It's saying, if you want to, look this through. And that is the most helpful thing I can think of if somebody wants to try it. Not just say, go for it, dude.
You know, when I was young, we didn't put the 25-year-old entrepreneur, you know, on a pedestal.
Right.
It kind of didn't exist.
Like, and right now, if you're not wearing a hoodie, you can't be an entrepreneur, right?
The folks who changed it were really like...
Oh, Ken's got his hoodie on.
He's got his hoodie
on. I got a new AI system coming out.
If you think about it, Microsoft and Apple had a lot to do with changing that culture, as did Google and stuff, because there was this premium for coders and young folks who grew up with that. We didn't grow up with it, and that whole ecosystem grew up. But from my perspective, being an entrepreneur at 50, which was when I launched One River, I was kind of now really, really well prepared. And I could take the risk economically. And I was betting on myself because I had to, meaning I wasn't going to work for anyone else at that point.
So do you ever run across entrepreneurs who make that leap and it doesn't go quite as quickly as they would like? And then they sort of now start drifting into other things. And do you have advice for them? I mean, how to, because maybe you try something and it doesn't land right away. What are kind of like some of the next steps?
It's a complex question because I think everyone has their own case study, right? Are they drifting because their product fit is not right? Are they drifting because they are not doing it well? Are they drifting because they have bills and pressure and this is not yielding the cash flow that they needed to make their ends meet, you know? So I think it's, you know, generally speaking, it's about cash first. First and foremost, you need 3 and 4 times what you think you need if you're going to be successful in entrepreneurship, because nobody's a straight line to success. it always takes double or triple longer and double or triple the dough. So the only way you can fight through that is have to have some sponsorship, maybe have some other side money coming in. When I launched One River, I actually had two consulting projects. And I did that to keep cash coming in the door, take a little pressure off me, extend the time it took to be successful. Because we also have these artificial goals. Like, it's never as fast as you think it's going to be.
Mm-hmm. Ken, what are your thoughts?
You know, in trying to get plays and things done, I'm helping a friend now, trying to bring a successful winning play in England, bringing it to America, won the BAFTAs there. And I said, you think it'll be up next fall? He said, no, maybe by 29. And I realized that the timeline of building a show to get to Broadway, or even off Broadway, putting a down payment on this theater, if and when it comes up, rehearsals, casting, you have the lead, but you didn't get the theater. Well, the lead fell through because he got a movie. That the timeline that you think that you want to have happen in your head, like building a house from scratch. Mm-hmm. And when those people say, we'll be in by Christmas. Not this Christmas, maybe 2 years. Yeah. But it's you know, to me, the thing I take away from Matt's book, and I think for any business, for any of us, is that if it's assume it's not going to happen on the timeline that you would like. And again, how are you going to keep it going in the interim? If it's a good idea, it'll catch on.
Yeah. I want to add one more point to that also, what's happening in your personal life. So if you've got a really good, stable personal life, and if you've got good support from a spouse or partner, it makes it infinitely easier. If you don't have critical challenges outside of, you know, your household, like parents and kids with struggles. And I had all of that, you know, but at 50, I had pretty solid skill set. So for me, I didn't worry about being successful. I just knew I had to do it, and I would learn the space, the art education space over time. Hire experts in that space and facilitate. And I look at, like, people who run businesses, probably facilitation is the thing you do the most, because you need to do what you do best and get a whole bunch of other people who do all these other things better than you if you're going to be successful.
Yes. Well, I'm just sitting here running through my own list of things.
I wanted to make a comment about Ken, because it's really interesting. You don't just sit back and play records all day on your slot on Q104.3, the rock of New York. You have the 3 at 3. I love the 3 at 3.
Oh, thank you.
I didn't get to catch it yesterday. If nobody's heard it, at 3 o'clock, he plays three songs that have to do with something going on in the news. And it might just be like one word from each song or something.
Right.
And then you have people call in and try to guess, right?
Yeah. And the reason I built that, and again, it's fun to do, but I built it with a purpose of what can we do for a work day that can orient people. We call that sort of appointment listening is the phrase we use in radio. And my favorite is, hey, Ken, you know, that's our coffee break. We all stop in the office at 3 o'clock and we all try to guess. There's a plumber who says, I always say, oh, I left a tool I need. And I go out to my truck at 3 to do it because that's their break in the day. I do a live song at 5 o'clock. We call it Live at 5. It's not that complicated, but people use it as a tool. Ken, if I'm not on the George Washington Bridge by the time you do Live at 5, I'm screwed. I'm not going to get home in time for dinner. And that's what radio can do at its best. And you keep it fun, but you take the concept of what will be of great value to the audience, mm-hmm. will be entertaining, but also will help us with listenership that then sales can go out and have it sponsored.
So you took a medium where people thought they knew everything and had done everything already, and you created something brand new in it. And I think you created community around that because people are calling you all the time.
Yeah. Look, we started this thing called Breakfast with the Beatles. And, you know, this goes back 5 years. And I had said to our program director, it's the anniversary of them coming to America. What if this Sunday morning, as I did a Sunday morning show too, I said, what if I played some Beatles? And Bob said, play all Beatles. Like 2 hours of Beatles. Like, yeah, play all Beatles. So I did it, and I came in Monday, and he said, did you play all Beatles? And I thought, you told me to. I thought he was mad. He said, we have never gotten so many emails, so many requests. They said, when are you going to do it again? I said, I'll do it next year. And here's brilliance. When he said, how about next week? And I said, really? He said, why not? And I did it next week, and it's been 25 years now. And the thing is, if you take a chance and it works, you know, don't look past that.
Someone had a thought there, because nowadays everything, so much of your success is all also tied to how well you manage your website and the user experience online. And we've all heard, maybe we haven't, about A-B testing. You know, so in effect, that was just a test. It was, they tested something, and it was, can A, we're going to try this, or we're gonna, B, we're going to continue to do it the old way that we were doing it. And now it worked, so they jumped into that pathway. And I think entrepreneurship requires that all the time. Yeah. If you're not testing, measuring, resetting, iterating, testing again, you can't get to a different place.
Yeah. Is that how you did it with School of Rock?
Yeah, I think almost every business that I've run over my career, there's always been tests. But nowadays, what's different, Kenny, is all of the data sets that you get through online traffic, through people responding, through you getting emails, through you getting inquiries. So it requires the analytics, because we would do so much by gut.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't have the analytics.
Right.
Bob's gut was, hey, and it wasn't gut. There was a data point. The phones rang off the hook.
Right.
That's a data
right.
point. Nowadays, it would be how long a duration were the calls, how many, which hours did they come in,
right.
how many, you know, how many went to the website.
And the other thing, too, is there's not the stigma associated with failure. Now you're supposed to fail, right? When I was a kid growing up, if you failed, that was a black mark against you. But now the culture has changed. So it's okay to make a mistake and correct course.
And it's testing. Trials is another term we use. And, you know, like when Nike comes out with new sneaker style, you know, they may not produce 7 million copies of that one. Yeah. They may test it in a market, in a few stores, get a little feedback, change the design again. People don't know that, but it's kind of how products evolve over time.
Yeah, well, Richard's been doing a deep dive into our YouTube videos, and you can watch.
Oh my
watch,
God! Talk about analytical data. You can watch the places where they drop off for
he's
sure.
Like, look, Elizabeth, you start talking, they all laugh.
I don't think I've been that frank.
You can also get paralyzed with too much information.
You can. Sometimes it's too much.
So you talk a little bit about in your book about dysfunctional safety zone. What is that? And since we're sort of on this topic of trial and error.
Okay, we're going to do a fun experiment right now. I want all of you to tell me the five or six things that frustrate you the most about your life that you're just stuck on right now. Go. I'm kidding. Okay.
It's an only an hour long
right.
show.
How often do you sit with people and they go from A to B to C to D and all these things? And then you sit with them.
Isn't that what your spouse is for, though? I mean.
And you sit and you go through all these ideas that you, because you want to help them. You have the empathy in you. They're a friend. They're, you know, a soulmate. And then they tell you every reason why they can't do any of them.
Yes.
So in some way, this dysfunctional safe zone is we stay where we are in life because making change seems scary. Even though what you just told me is a pathway to probably more decline over time, if you don't make it, people have to completely like fall hard sometimes to make change happen, because then it's like they've got nothing to lose. My premise is very simply that this dysfunctional safe zone is a moment for us to reflect our own self-awareness. I have been where I am now for the last 2 years complaining about the same things. Why haven't I changed any of them? Why haven't I improved any of them? Is it because I don't know what it is, how to do it, need the help, need the impetus, I'm scared? So we wind up staying where we are. And you have one life to live, I think.
Yeah. It's about the illusion of safety. There is
the
no
illusion
safety.
Of safety.
That's a great point.
It's the illusion of safety. But like if you have something like, we'll call it a bubbling up medical issue, and you don't go do the testing, that bubbling up medical issue gets worse. There's no safety because your blood pressure's off the chart and you haven't gone for the proper tests. And that's just one example. It could be personal, health, professional, you name it. So I just think there's something about human nature where I don't have this. I've always been attacking myself to a fault. And it's part of the resilience, entrepreneurship, but I came live my whole life in a dysfunctional world that I had to self-navigate. So it built some muscles to quickly diagnose broken stuff and push through it. Sometimes push too fast, too hard. So I had the opposite piece.
So does your book help people do
that? It does. It does. So I work through a program where you can actually diagnose first, you know, self-awareness. Where are you at? What's the current state? It's strategy like we do in business. The concept is to treat yourself like a business.
So what is the name of your book?
Grow or Fold, Transform Yourself in Midlife and Beyond.
Is it on Amazon?
It's on Amazon. It's on every bookstore.
We're here with Matt Ross, who's the founder of the One River School and former CEO of School of Rock, along with Ken Daschau from Q104.3, The Rock of New York. I mean, it's been absolutely amazing. A couple more questions for you. Talk about rediscovering creativity and passion. That's something both of you, I think, can speak to. Ken?
The one question people always say, you're playing the same songs all these years. How do you still stay so passionate about it? Because as an actor, as a performer, I still remember the excitement of hearing it for the first time. I remember buying this album. I remember this. I remember that passion for it. And how do you do 8 shows a week on Broadway, that matinee on Wednesday that is just a killer for every performer in the crew? But the people in the audience, that's the first time they're seeing it. Yeah. You know, a ball player, how do you get out on that field when it's the last thing you feel like doing today and your wife's going through a thing and we all have that, whether you're a star or just, you know, driving a bus, whatever. But if you can get up and do it and do your best, and that's what I try to bring, whatever's going on in my head. I've always known since I was a kid, you leave that outside the studio door when I walk in. When I walk in, it's not about sharing my problems. The only time I would talk about something in my personal life is this, if it's a funny story and some crazy thing happened to me, that's a shared experience with the audience. But otherwise, I'm there to make your day a little bit better. And that's how I always looked at it, is that if this music and I can say something or say something interesting or fun, I did my 2 bits for the day.
You are pretty funny sometimes.
You are pretty funny. But if you're working with your passion, I know this is overstated, but if you're working with your passion, it's an easier place to go back to because you're passionate about what you're doing. You're passionate about your audience and you're passionate about your music. And so that gives you the fuel to get to the next phase where you can put all the other stuff, because it's a lower priority. At least
Richard, 100%. It's right now I'm in my 60s and get together every year with some old friends. And the discussion's always, when are you going to retire? And friends are like, 2 years, 3 months. I got 7 weeks. And they say to me, you ever think about retiring? I'm like, yeah, that's why I wake up in a cold sweat in the middle of the night. And that's what I say to all the young people here at iHeart in New York. That thing that's your passion, that video you want to work on, you don't care if you sleep till 4 a.m.
Right. Yeah.
Do that.
Yes.
And when you're 20 or 21, it's easier to do. When you're 55, it's harder. But that was my takeaway from Matt's book, Grow or Fold. If you have this passion and you see it could work, you just visualize how it could work, but you don't know how to get there.
I mean, you have to get money to pay your bills. I understand that. But would you do it anyway? Or at least a little bit anyway, because you like what you're doing so much.
For me, 100%.
I would as well. At this stage of my life,
yeah,
obviously.
100%.
Yeah.
There's a joy to
sure.
it every day.
Yeah.
And speaking of which, I have to go do that.
Ken has a show.
Ken has a real show.
Hey, don't put yourself down. This is a real show.
So that was Ken Daschau of Q104.3, The yep. Rock of New York. So I was talking to somebody who's at Loose Ends. She left her job. She's in her early 60s, and she's casting about, and I said to her, what is the one thing, like, what is your day like? What's the one thing you really want to do when you get up in the morning? She couldn't think of anything. I'm hoping that she can, because I tell her I'm doing research, like, as soon as I get up, my first cup of tea, like, I'm doing research, because I have to exercise, but I'm really driven. What are you driven to do? And is that something you cover in your book?
It's kind of a challenge, because everyone has their own sort of personality traits and makeup. Like you, I'm quite driven. I probably have a to-do list that's way too long. And so for me, it's about prioritizing and spending my time in the right way, doing the right things for the right amount of time. Other folks, man, you know, they hit different stages of life where they get discouraged. They may need a consultant or a coach, somebody to get them over the hump to crystallize the strategy. So I've used this tool, the Gallup sort of Clifton Strengths Finder, for years. I recommend everyone look into it. There's four boxes: relationship, strategy, execution, and influence. I'm very high on strategy and people, relationship. But if you're really high on execution, but you need help on strategy, the plan, then get somebody to help you. The problem is people don't ask for help. We all have this sort of thing. I don't want to present that vulnerability. I don't want to tell people that I'm lost. So I go down undercover and fake it, you know? And I think that's the problem. You got to raise your hand if you need a plan and you need the help. My book gives you tools to do it. You still may need somebody to help you.
I think everybody needs a coach.
Yep.
I have a coach.
Completely.
Yeah.
We're with Matt Ross, who is the founder of the One River School, and he's also the former CEO of the School of Rock. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to the podcast and leave a quick review. Also, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and X, and subscribe to our YouTube channel for bonus content.